maybe with Tillerson leaving, he has integrated his portfolio of cabinet heads to be more on the hawkish side and less on the negotiation side.
We will explore what the firing of the U.S. Secretary of State might have on planned U.S.-North Korea talks and the U.S. relationship with China. This is Thursday, the 15th of March, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melvin in Washington. Also ahead, as the global map of international threats expands, so does NATO's horizon. And Chinese artist and dissident Ai Weiwei unveils a 60-meter inflatable rubber raft carrying more than 300 inflatable refugees, all on today's VOA Asia. China is voicing support for the possible U.S.-North Korea summit despite concerns that it will be left out of talks that could dramatically alter regional security and political dynamics. President Trump surprised the world last week when he agreed to accept North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's offer to meet about ending Pyongyang's nuclear weapons program. And then on Tuesday, the U.S. president fired his Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, nominating CIA Director Mike Pompeo to that post. We welcome to VOA Asia Orville Schell. He is the Arthur Ross Director of the Center on U.S.-China Relations at the Asia Society in New York City, also a former professor and dean at the University of California, Berkeley's Graduate School of Journalism. Professor Schell, thanks for being with us. Let's first talk about Tillerson, if you don't mind. What does his absence mean as far as the possible talks between Trump and Kim Jong-un?
Well, he was never a very strong Secretary of State, but he did believe in negotiations, and I think did have a capacity in some measure to shelter the whole scenario that President Moon Jae-in of Korea has sketched out to try to bring the table. We really don't know what Mike Pompeo what his disposition will be towards such talks. But it's not illogical to conclude that, I mean, if Trump is sort of on both sides of many contradictions, this is true of China, too. On the one hand, he's Xi Jinping's best friend, and he wants to sort of make a deal, and to some degree, China was obliged in Korea, although not completely. But on the other hand, you go back to his campaign persona, it's very, very sort of adversarial in regard to China, particularly on the issue of trade, and that we see rising more and more. So maybe with Tillerson leaving, he has integrated his portfolio of cabinet heads to be more on the hawkish side and less on the negotiation side.
And what does that mean as far as any balance if these talks do take place?
Well, I mean, it could mean that China has sort of missed an opportunity to make a deal. I think it's not that opportunity isn't completely passed, but it's getting closer and closer to oblivion. And I think it's China's sort of inability to recognize that the playing field was out of level and that the U.S. sooner or later was going to have to respond. And Trump has certainly pushed forward that part of the American sort of policy portfolio. And indeed, I think the climate in America is increasingly irritated and fed up with the situation that it finds itself in particularly in businessmen in China. So I think we may be in for a fairly rough patch with China in a more adversarial way. And actually, North Korea was a place where we could have really had a convergence had Xi Jinping been able to lock in, a more reasonable deal when Trump was in Beijing.
Do you believe that these talks will take place? And if you do you think they'll reach any type of conclusions?
I think it's possible that they will take place, because if they don't, it would be a loss of face for Trump. And I think even Kim Jong-un sees a great opportunity here to get on the world stage as an equal player. So I have a feeling that both have a vested interest now in doing so. But whether they can actually push the ball forward on the question of the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, that's another question, and that's a very heavy lift. And I think that I would be very surprised if Trump is any more successful than his those who preceded him.
We did mention China seems to be left on the sidelines of this whole scenario. How do you see that?
Well, I think so far this has been an arrangement that the two Koreas have made. And now they're bringing in Trump because he's agreed to meet with Kim Jong-un. So for the moment, anyway, China is on the sideline. But I think in the end, China will never be on the sideline going forward, particularly in Asia. So its shadow is always long and dark, and it will have an influence regardless of what happens in the next few months on this negotiation.
Professor, thank you so much for being with us. I greatly appreciate it. Orville Schell is the Arthur Ross Director of the Center on U.S.-China Relations at the Asia Society in New York, also a former professor and dean at the University of California, Berkeley's Graduate School of Journalism. These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. The Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte pulls his country out of the International Criminal Court. A suicide bomb blast at a police post in eastern Pakistan kills at least 9 and wounds more than 20. The United States rejects as laughable and patently false Iranian allegations that American troops in Afghanistan support Islamic State militants. A high-ranking New Zealand diplomat to the United States is censured for a profanity-laced tweet about U.S. Democrats and their presidential prospects for 2020. And authorities in Nepal reject claims they were to blame for confusion before a deadly plane crash at the Kathmandu airport. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAAsia.com website. As its name applies, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization has its roots in Europe and North America. But as the alliance faces new global threats, it's begun to broaden its horizons. VOA's Yella DeFranceschi takes a closer look at how North Korea's missile and nuclear buildup has led NATO to boost its engagement in the Asia-Pacific region.
While North Korea may have signaled its intent to suspend nuclear tests in return for a summit between Kim Jong-un and U.S. President Donald Trump, NATO's concerns over Pyongyang's nuclear ambitions remain. The alliance's top civilian leader, Jens Stoltenberg, recently described North Korea as a global threat.
This behavior of North Korea is a global threat and requires a global response, and that, of course, also includes NATO.
It takes unity and strong partnerships, those that span the Atlantic and the Pacific, to counter the prospect of a nuclear-armed North Korea, adds Barry Pavel.
The question of NATO in the Pacific used to be, well, is NATO going to go to the Pacific? But I think the key question now is the Pacific is coming to NATO.
While serving at NATO from 2003 to 2006, General James Jones met with officials from the Asia-Pacific region.
I had visits from Australia. I had visits from Pakistan, believe it or not, and other countries from different parts of the world wanting to know more about NATO. So this is the future of NATO. I hope that NATO's global aspirations are measured. I wouldn't do this quickly. I would start with partnerships and see how that goes.
NATO has four partners in the Pacific: Australia, Japan, New Zealand, and South Korea. Australia and New Zealand have deployed troops under the NATO banner in Afghanistan. Japan and South Korea have made big contributions to reconstruction and development efforts there. All four have taken part in NATO missions to fight piracy off the coast of Somalia, and all four have signed formal partnership agreements with NATO. Further afield, Thailand, Malaysia, and Singapore all seem interested in partnering with NATO, say experts. India and Indonesia might also look for strong ties to such a group. In an age of globalized insecurity, it is natural for the Western alliance to expand its mandate, says former top NATO commander Jones.
The North Atlantic Treaty Organization to be simply a reactive alliance that is to defend Europe, if you will, minus Russia, seems to be a very expensive proposition, that Russia doesn't have the force that it would need to defeat Europe.
NATO has seen its primary focus evolve since its founding in 1949. In the 1950s, the alliance was a bulwark against the Soviet threat. In the 1960s and 70s, it was a political instrument for detente. In the 1990s, the alliance was a tool for stabilizing Eastern Europe and Central Asia, incorporating new partners and allies. Now in the 21st century, NATO is evolving again as it faces new global risks entailing global defense. Yela De Franceschi, Washington, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, former South Korean President Lee Myung-bak was questioned by prosecutors Wednesday in connection to a massive corruption probe, joining a long list of ex-leaders tainted by scandal. China voices support for the possible U.S.-North Korea summit, despite concerns it will be left out of talks that could dramatically alter regional security and political dynamics. And Myanmar says it's verified fewer than 400 Rohingya for repatriation. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are happy you are with us. Thousands of U.S. students across the nation walked out of class at mid-morning Wednesday to protest the lack of congressional action to combat gun violence in American schools. They also remembered those killed in a mass shooting last month at a Florida high school. VOA Asia's Jim Stevenson has more on large numbers of students who gathered in silent protest outside the White House before walking to the U.S. Capitol in Washington.
The silent protests lasted for 17 minutes, one for each of the 14 students and three adults killed on February 14th when a troubled 19-year-old gunman opened fire at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. This 13-year-old student is concerned about school safety at Walt Whitman High School in Rockville, Maryland.
Parkland was rated one of the safest districts in America before the shooting, so really I think the general attitude is that no one feels safe anymore.
This student VOA Asia spoke with wonders why the United States has a larger gun problem compared to other nations.
I want more laws to be done about gun restriction. There's other countries in the world like Japan. It doesn't have this problem. We're the only country in the world that has this problem, where gun violence is like an everyday issue. In Sweden or in Japan or like in China, all these countries, this issue is not prevalent.
One suggestion to protect students is to arm teachers, but the student told us she disagrees.
In the chaos of a school shooting, having more people have guns would just increase the violence, increase the deaths, I think, and that's just not safe.
Many student protesters are calling for a ban on sales of assault weapons like the one used in the Florida shooting, but that is highly unlikely to occur. Jim Stevenson, VOA Asia.
Make sure you find out more about this story, compiled by our colleague Skylar Ogden, on our Facebook page at VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
Here's a news alert from VOA Asia. A U.S. trade representative says the United States will challenge Indian government export subsidies, saying they hurt American workers and manufacturers. The U.N. says progress is being made in setting up a system to monitor and document human rights violations in North Korea, particularly those that may amount to crimes against humanity. The top American commander in Afghanistan and other U.S. officials are talking up prospects for peace negotiations with the Taliban. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. We continue now. Chinese artist and dissident Ai Weiwei has unveiled a 60-meter inflatable rubber raft carrying more than 300 anonymous oversized figures in Sydney, Australia. It's to represent the plight of refugees around the world. His work of art comes as more than 11,000 migrants have arrived by sea in Europe so far this year, according to the UN High Commissioner for Refugees. Nearly 430 of them have died or gone missing in the attempt. VOA's Mariama Diallo has more.
The exiled Chinese artist unveiled the large artwork this week in Sydney to call attention to the plight of migrants, especially those who undergo dangerous journeys to get to Europe.
We cannot disassociate our connections to other human beings, the suffering and the tragic life of our global human community.
The 60-meter inflatable rubber raft carrying more than 300 oversized figures symbolizes refugee boats arriving in Europe. In a recent VOA interview, the artist recalled a shocking incident in Lesbos, Greece, that he witnessed.
You have been hearing about the refugees all the time on the news, but to see a real group of people come down is very different. You see the children, the women, and you see those elderly people. And they're tired, they're frightened. I never experienced something like that. You know, even I grew up in communist society.
But what's more discouraging, the artist notes, is that their struggle continues even after they make it to other countries.
But once they arrived in Europe, basically they're being refused by all kind of excuse, politicians, policies, and basically they are being neglected.
The artwork is installed on Cockatoo Island, a former shipbuilding site, titled Law of the Journey. It's made from the same manufactured rubber as the vessels that carried refugees across the Mediterranean Sea. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
This news alert from VOA Asia, as President Donald Trump seeks to impose tariffs of up to $60 billion of Chinese imports. China's foreign ministry says that China would take firm measures to safeguard its legitimate trade rights. A suicide bomb blast at a police post in eastern Pakistan late Wednesday killed at least 9, wounding more than 20. The U.S. Defense Secretary says the U.S. is picking up signs of interest from the Taliban on the possibility of talks with Kabul to end their war after more than 16 years. All the big stories coming your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. There are reports indicating the Trump administration may be preparing to widen its protectionist trade policy by imposing tariffs on up to $60 billion of Chinese imports. Just days after announcing tariffs on steel and aluminum imports, Reuters, quoting people who have discussed the matter with members of the administration, said the action is tied to a Section 301 intellectual property investigation under the 1974 U.S. Trade Act. It would target the Chinese technology and telecommunications sectors. The Office of the U.S. Trade Representative has accused Beijing of infringing on U.S. intellectual property rights, including the counterfeiting of goods. It's also criticized China for demanding U.S. companies transfer their technology when setting up businesses in China. Gary Huffbauer, economist at the Washington-based Peterson Institute for International Economics, told VOA's Victor Beatty he's surprised at how the issue is being handled.
I had expected that we would have a report first from the U.S. Trade Representative on the extent of Chinese forced technology transfer and maybe other practices as well, espionage. And then President Trump would consider the measures, more or less the same sequence as happened with the Section 232 aluminum and steel cases. Now, here we have this report, this rumor that President Trump is about to impose tariffs and no report has yet been issued. It is a very surprising inversion. The other thing that's surprising is the amount. It's a pretty high amount, $60 billion of merchandise imports. And thirdly, it comes right after the president challenged the Chinese leadership to come up with its own plan for reducing the U.S. trade deficit with China by $100 billion in the year ahead. So the timing has surprised me, frankly. And if it's correct, if the report is correct, I think we are getting closer to a trade war with China.
While the tariffs could be chiefly targeted at information technology, consumer electronics, and telecoms, they could be much broader. The list could eventually run to 100 products.
Yes, that's a lot of products, and the Chinese government will feel obliged, I think, to retaliate in some fashion. Maybe this leak is just intended to prompt serious negotiations with China on steps that China might take to open its markets to reduce the bilateral trade deficit. It's hard for an outsider to tell, but anyway, this is very stern stuff.
Obviously, this comes right on the heels of the steel and aluminum announcement on tariffs. Is a budget surplus or a budget deficit in the case of the U.S. with China, is that a bad thing?
I don't think it's a bad thing. Clearly, President Trump thinks it's a very bad thing. So we have a different view of how economies work and how they interact in the international sphere. So he takes that bilateral trade deficit as a big sore point and a big indication that the U.S. is being disadvantaged in its trade relationship with China. I don't agree with any of that, but that's the president's view. The other surprising point, which you've just mentioned, is that this comes so close to the steel and aluminum tariffs, which are supposed to be the subject of negotiations with trading partners, especially allies, as to possible exemptions. But, you know, those negotiations haven't taken place. And now we get this announcement. So looks more like setting up friction, trade skirmishes, even trade battles with many countries at the same time, which is surprising.
Gary Huffpower said the report, surfacing just a day after the Trump administration squashed a hostile takeover bid by Singapore-based Broadcom, the U.S. company Qualcomm, for national security reasons, represents a cascade of aggressive U.S. trade policy moves that are in many ways directed at China. Scientists are always on the lookout for affordable and efficient methods for capturing carbon dioxide, responsible for global warming and the warming and the rising acidity of seawater. A new procedure developed at the University of York in Great Britain promises to extract large amounts of CO2 from seawater and store it safely and recycle millions of tons of aluminum waste at the same time. VOA's George Putich has more.
Dr. Alison Parkin, a lecturer at the University of York, collects seawater in Whitby Harbor in northern England. Back in her lab, the technicians filter the water, pour it into a dish, insert electrodes made of graphite, and start electrolysis.
We found that when we wrapped this in aluminium, what we could manage to do is we could pull the carbon dioxide from out of a gas mixture into sodium chloride or seawater solution and make a white solid, which is then stored carbon. And what we've realized is that this is a really energy efficient and hopefully highly scalable method of managing to trap carbon dioxide.
Atoms of aluminum pieces floating in seawater bind with carbon dioxide molecules. When the water is poured off, what is left is a white sludge containing a mineral called dawsonite, rich in CO2. Scientists say aluminum could come from collected metal waste.
If you look at the amounts of aluminium and iron, which are not recycled every year, then you're looking at tens of millions of tons of aluminium.
But the process also requires energy. North offers this solution.
Sunlight to provide the electricity, or a wind turbine, some renewable source of electricity, is all you need to make the technology go.
Another byproduct of this process is hydrogen, useful for fuel cells that already power some electric vehicles. Researchers say an industrial-sized facility could mineralize as much as 850 tons of CO2 annually. George Putich, VOA News.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download the podcast and take VOA Asia with you wherever you go. Well, almost everywhere. You can find us at voanews.com. Let's hear from you. VOA Asia Facebook and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Greg Burns. Our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our team, Jim Stevenson, David Byrd, and Skylar Ogden. I'm Ira Melman in Washington, D.C. Have a wonderful day.